T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Hey, welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon. And you're going to want to listen to this particular interview, because have you ever streamed anything? Of course you have. I mean, COVID in the last year, that's all you've done is stream stuff on TV because you couldn't go anywhere. But the question becomes, how are all of these streaming services playing and getting along with each other? And more importantly, how is it going to shake out in the streaming wars after this process moves forward? So joining us this afternoon is the editor-at-large at CNET, Ian Shearer. Hey, thanks for joining us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Of course.
Netflix made a very interesting announcement this week, and they announced that they're going to dive into video games online. So I want you to tell us a little bit about what this will entail and whether this is really the next level of evolution for streaming services.
Yeah, I think what has been really interesting is that over the last decade or so, the video game industry has been slowly finding a new way for us all to play video games. You know, normally we all have to have some sort of a box, either it's a small one or a big one, with a lot of fans sometimes on it that are very loud, that connect to our screen and show us beautiful video games, right? Very immersive worlds, really engrossing storylines, all sorts of stuff like that. But that is what we typically experience. Well, about 10 years ago, some companies started looking at how can we do with video games what we do with Netflix, right, where you watch a movie that is somewhere else, right, not in your home, and it is streamed to you over the internet. And then you're able to essentially watch it at really high quality resolution, but it's not sitting on a computer anywhere in your home. And this technology called game streaming, or cloud gaming as we also call it, it was very much in its infancy until recently. And part of what has really changed things is that the cost of this technology has gone down, and the competition for it has gone super high. We have companies like Google and Amazon and all trying to get in on this, on top of Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo already starting to play with it. So no shock at all that we now are hearing Netflix is looking into getting into this as well.
Well, gamers are very particular about the look and feel of the game. And so the first thing that comes to my mind as I'm thinking about this, and I understand bandwidth speeds and I understand that, but from a user experience perspective, would this type of online gaming or cloud gaming, would it give the user the same type of an experience in terms of, you know, whenever you push a button, whenever you're firing the gun, you've got to see an instant response there. Would they expect the same or similar type of experience to what they're used to when they've got their own box?
You have hit on why this technology is still not the mainstream yet. You know, part of what has slowed down the adoption of this is that a lot of us have bad internet at home. I mean, I come from Silicon Valley, which famously has terrible internet, shockingly.
How ironic.
And so it's funny, I had to move across the country to get decent internet. And the thing is that this is something that is a constant problem all over the place, right? It's not just in other parts of the country. And so what really this requires is a super fast internet connection for me, a lot of investment dollars from the company, And as a result, the stuff really hasn't gotten to the point where, like, those competitive hardcore gamers are impressed with it. What it is good for is for a lot of the people who aren't competing online, right? So you're not playing against other people. Maybe you're going through the really fascinating historical fiction action game of Assassin's Creed, or maybe you're going through a dungeon in Diablo or something like that, where it doesn't matter as much how quickly your ability to push the button and immediately see it on the screen is. And those are things that where it's started to pick up, but for the most part, the hardcore gaming world has not gotten into this yet. And I think that's part of why Netflix has said that they're not going to try to run a lot of those top-end games on their service. They're going to offer mobile games. So, you'll be able to download, like, a Stranger Things, kind of game where you're able to kind of go around the town and stuff like that and experience what life is like in that movie universe. Or maybe you'll be able to watch something like Bandersnatch, which was a really fascinating experiment by Netflix where you get to actually control the whole story as
it was fascinating. It was fascinating because it was unique and different.
It was very different, right? And the thing is that all of these things cost oodles of money to make, even a mobile game that's good. So Netflix is used to spending money, which is why it's no shock that they're considering this.
Well, you mentioned that they're not afraid to spend money, but for years and years, Netflix was truly the only streaming game in town. But now, of course, they're not. So is this the kind of evolution that Netflix feels is necessary to stand out from the pack of the other streaming services?
That is a very good question. I think that they definitely feel the competition from HBO and Disney and whatnot. It's worth noting, though, that Netflix executives have repeatedly called out video games, including Fortnite, as one of their biggest competitors. They don't mention HBO and Disney as often. I often always think that sleep is Netflix's biggest competitor because I see people watching it all the time. But the thing is that they really see Fortnite as a huge competition, as Call of Duty is big competition. So for them, it's partially stand out from the pack, right? Disney has already given up on making video games, and HBO really hasn't put a lot of effort into that type of stuff. So I don't expect them to right now. Whereas, for Netflix, this offers an opportunity to stand out from the crowd a little bit, but also to expand into arguably a much larger business. Video games are larger than movies and music combined.
I know, it's amazing.
So there's a lot of opportunity here on top of them being able to compete against Disney and HBO.
We're talking to Ian Scher. He is the editor-at-large at CNET and master of all things technical. So I appreciate you joining us here this afternoon on the Mark Reardon Show. You know, you mentioned Disney Plus, and there's been a great deal of pushback by the box office industry recently for Disney's decision to really simultaneously launch Black Widow at the box office and on Disney Plus. But from your perspective, is this business model simply a COVID adaptation, or is this a truly snapshot of trends to come?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I originally, when I saw Wonder Woman 1984, which was the first real test at this, right, when back during Christmas last year, when that came out and it did really well at the box office at a time when we did not have a vaccine, people were still terrified to go out, and it turned out that people were renting out full theaters with their friends to be able to watch this, right? And there was a sign that people wanted to be able to watch movies in a theater even if they had the opportunity to watch it for free at home through HBO. That was really interesting to have happen. Now, what has happened since is that we've seen repeat viewings don't happen seemingly as often. Now, again, we're living in a whole different universe,
sure,
right? This is not 2019. Everything we thought that the way the world worked before then for entertainment is out the window. So what we're learning right now is it seems repeat viewings are not as common, although we don't have really enough data to even tell us that. And we also are seeing that people still want to go to the theater. So the question is, for Black Widow, right, if it had been released just in the theater without the streaming option, which, by the way, Disney charges $30 to watch it, HBO charged nothing extra to watch Wonder Woman, then, you know, the question is, would Black Widow have seen its second week sales go down as far as much as it did? Now, the first week was incredible. They beat a lot of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't know. I think that offering the streaming option at this point in time, when a lot of people, by the way, I'm including myself here, are very hesitant to go out in large groups because I have young kids and I don't want to bring anything home,
sure,
even though I'm vaccinated, there's a potential, right? And so for me, I don't want to put my kids in that situation just to watch a movie, even if I'm really a big fan of Marvel. So I think there are enough people like me that are willing to pay Disney twice the cost of a ticket to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what this is going to turn into. But it is not shocking at all to see AMC and Lowe's and everybody pile on Disney for doing this, because they don't want any threat to their theaters, right? They know,
true,
that the minute we get all used to the idea of watching at home instead of the theater, they have to compete in a way different way than they used to, right?
Yes.
It used to be they had to compete against each other, and the only place to watch it was with them. Now they have to convince me to get out of my home, and that is really hard for them to do.
Well, I will throw this in, Ian. Subjectively, you know, I watched Wonder Woman 1984 for free, and I still think I overpaid. But that, you know, that's just
alone. There were a lot of mixed reviews of that. I enjoyed it, but I get where some of the criticism was.
Oh yeah. Hey, we're talking to Ian Shearer. He is the editor at large at CNET. And last question. You know, one of the things I've noticed over the last years with technology, and this always happens, it went all the way back to VHS and versus beta, and that is there's a lot of products for the consumer to consider, and then through consolidation or competition, those choices,
yep,
reduce and reduce and reduce down to just a few choices. And right now, I think Paramount Plus, which was, I think, the once really anticipated service, has fallen rather flat. And the industry rumors that I've heard is that Viacom is shopping Paramount primarily because of Paramount Plus not meeting expectations. Have you heard any of that, or do you see that type of consolidation happening in the industry?
So I can't speak to the rumors, and I also should probably mention that at one point I pulled a paycheck from CBS Viacom, so I have to be careful there, right? But I will say that generally speaking, consolidation is definitely a thing. And secondly, you know, I've talked to a lot of executives, by the way, including the former chairman, interim chairman of Viacom CBS, right? Strauss Zelnick, who, by the way, runs a video game company.
Wow.
He runs the Grand Theft Auto people. And he's a really fun guy to talk to. And one of the things he said is, he said, look, I think that people, at the end of the day, after all these streaming things have come out and all this hype is gone, that I think only people are going to pay for about 4 streaming services, and that's it. And you have to figure out which ones they are going to be for you. After that, you're going to feel like you're paying too much. And so if you think about it, there are right now, we have a list on CNET. There are 30 that you could easily,
goodness,
pick. And they're not, and we're not reaching too far to find those 30.
Right.
Like, these are mainstream names. So if you're picking between 30, when one of the most successful and knowledgeable people in the industry, who, by the way, also used to run Sony BMG and Fox Studios, says that 4 is the number, I think that that's all you need to know about why Paramount might be struggling.
Boy, that is excellent analysis. Ian Shearer, he's the editor-at-large at CNET. Hey, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on The Mark Reardon Show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, when we come back from this break, we're going to get an update from Dave Klein on the 5-inch snake. More fun and frivolity and news to come after this. We'll be right back on 97.1 FM Talk. You make me live. Welcome back to The Mark Reardon Show. And last night, as if I can't get enough of 97.1, I'm driving home from the station after being on from 3 to 6 yesterday. And of course, I keep listening to 97.1. So I'm listening to the best of the Dave Glover Show, and I hear Dave Klein talking about his encounter with the snake, which I missed the first time.
Yeah, well, not just any snake. The 5-inch snake.
The 5-inch snake.
That packs a massive bite.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
The
massive bite.
He's been my nemesis for a while now.
So you tell the story, and I understand there's an update.
There is, yeah. So I was cutting my grass the other day. I'm going out of town this weekend, so I thought I'm going to make my lawn look presentable while I'm gone. I'm going to cut my grass. And this snake I probably see every other time or so I cut the grass. I go up the hill with the lawnmower. I come back down. I'm starting to come back down, and I see a little wiggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the snake that I hit. So I go up to the snake. I'm kind of horrified to see a trail of blood, and that an inch from the snake was separated from the rest of him. Mm. So in the 4 inches of the snake was still moving.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I thought, well, just to make myself feel better and not feel so guilty about it,
there you go.
I chucked him into the common ground behind my house.
Chucked him into the common ground.
Yes.
Which is what you do after you've mortally wounded, or think you may have mortally wounded this vicious 5-inch snake.
I had to get rid of the body, Brad. That's what I did.
Dispose of the evidence.
So last night.
No body, no crime.
Exactly. So last night I'm out there. I didn't get a chance to trim around my grass and around my shed and because I ran out of sunlight on, was that Tuesday night, Wednesday night? Wednesday night. And I thought, well, I'm going to go out there last night and take care of that before we leave. So I'm out there, and I'm out by the area where the 1 inch of the snake that was cut off was still there. I for some reason, I left that there. I'm not sure why. I don't know why I didn't pick that up and throw that into the woods, too. So I'm right by that area, and I noticed that the inch is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And right next to it, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, is just a steaming pile of excrement. And I have a little dog, so I knew, okay, this was not her, because I've seen what she can leave. It was big. So I don't know what was back there, but
karma.
Something.
Karma was
something,
back there, Dave.
So I don't think karma.
Oh, I've heard
that
karma
like
can poop.
Something ate the inch of the snake and then pooped in my yard.
Oh,
jeez.
So it's the circle of life.
I know.
Is what I'm hearing.
I know.
Dave.
He eats the 1 inch, and then it comes back as fertilizer.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not going to pick that up with my hands and get rid of that. I'm just going to just let that sit there. But
let that be a reminder to us all.
But as Sue, as you pointed out when you had this discussion the other day with Dave, the snakes can actually regrow their tails.
Yes. It won't have a spine. Our 5-inch, with now 4-inch snake, won't be the same. But he will be able to do that. This was really upsetting to me for some reason, and I think it was the blood trail that did it.
Yeah,
you know?
Blood trail.
Not
we
a good
could
thing.
Have helped him, maybe. I would have taken him somewhere, bandaged him up. But the poop story takes a, it kind of makes sense, you know?
I think nature is getting its revenge on me
right
now.
Yeah, it's just sending you a message.
I think it really is.
Yes.
So as I'm listening to this last night, I'm reminded, and I don't think I've told you guys this story before, but this was in the late 1990s. I'm living in Florissant, and I've got the calmest dog. We have a fenced-in backyard, and the calmest black lab dog you would ever want.
Love so, black labs.
Love
sweet,
black labs.
Sweet dogs.
Yes.
Let her out in the yard. She never barks. She didn't do anything wrong. Great dog. So I'm back there, and all of a sudden I hear her going berserk. So I go back out there to see why is my dog going berserk? She doesn't do this.
What time of day?
This was right at dusk.
Okay.
And as I go out there, and we have a chain link fence at the time, and there is this possum that's sitting on a chain link fence.
Possums? Okay.
And the possum is sitting there going...
Oh, they're nasty.
Oh, they're mean and nasty.
Yes.
But so it's hissing at my dog.
Yeah.
My dog's going berserk, and the possum, of course, is going. I'm like, oh, you know, I got to do something because this possum's going to bite my dog.
Take your dog in.
So I know, but like, I let the dog spend a lot of time because she had a lot of energy. Black labs need to run.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I'm just gonna kill the possum with a shovel.
Okay. I can't handle any more killing animal stories. Mark Cox caught a possum this morning, and
did he really?
Yeah, it happened over the last couple of days. Possums are really good at eating rodents and ticks and all kinds of little stuff like that. He caught it and took it elsewhere and relocated it.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes, that is what you can do.
Oh,
I can't. I truly cannot handle another.
Well,
I'm killing
this
an
has
animal
a good.
Story.
This has a good ending. This has a good ending. Sort of. So I beat this possum with a shovel.
Wow.
Okay? And she's going. There goes Sue.
I'm done.
She's going.
That's not a good ending.
Well, it has a good ending. Kind
you
of a
beat
good
a possum.
Ending. So I beat this possum with a shovel, right?
Because
I don't want it to harm my dog that I
sure,
love very
sure.
much. And this possum's neck is contorted in a way that looks like
I'm waiting for the good part of this,
so
Brad.
So I beat this thing, but it's still alive and it's still hissing. It's still hissing at me, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, well, now I feel bad. I feel badly because the thing is not dead, and I feel like I've damaged, like you, when you hit the snake, you're like, now I need to put it out of its misery.
Right.
So I go into the house, and I come out with a pistol.
Again, waiting for the good part, Brad.
So I got this pistol, and it's only a .22. It's not it's not like a 9mm
sure.
or .45 or something. So I come out with this, just a .22 pistol, and I look around. Nobody's out. It's suburbia. So I put the barrel right above between its eyes.
You weren't worried about the possum at this point attacking you?
No, because he's like just laying there hissing.
Okay.
He's not moving. He's laying there hissing. And I squeeze the trigger. It's a .22, smallest round you can buy.
Mm-hmm.
I just squeeze the trigger. And then boom, it was the biggest boom I could have imagined. Because of suburbia, everything echoed with all of the houses.
Right.
And so lights start going on all in my neighborhood, the back porch lights, because someone just fired a gun in
suburbia.
I'm sure
that's a rarity.
You don't hear that.
Right.
And lights are going on. So now I run in the house, and I'm thinking, oh, the cops are going to be here any minute. So I tell my wife, listen, if the cops show up, I do all the talking. Understand? All
mm-hmm.
the talking. You just don't even, just let me handle it. Because I was sure the cops are going to be there in 10 minutes. So we wait like an hour. By now, it's just pitch black outside. Cops don't show up. Everything's fine. So now I'm thinking I got to go dispose of this possum that's in my backyard. So I got there with a shovel to clean it up, and it's gone.
The possum's gone.
The possum is gone. And so I'm thinking, oh, some other animal must have drug it off. So I really don't think a lot about it until another week or two goes by. My dog's in the backyard, and it's about that same dusk kind of time. And my dog's barking, going crazy. So I go out there with a flashlight. I'm like, now what's going on? So I shine the light where my dog is barking in the neighbor's yard. And there's a possum. And his eyes light up with the flashlight. And he's got a bullet hole in his head.
Wait a minute. You're telling me this possum survived a gunshot from point blank range.
Not just that. It survived getting beaten with a shovel.
And shot in the head.
With its neck apparently broken. I shot it in the head, and then when it disappeared, I am not making this up, and so I shine the flashlight on it, and it's hissing at me again.
Well, now it's pissed off.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's still doing that at me, except he's from the neighbor's yard, and he's got a bullet hole in his head, and he's walking around like there's no problem. And I thought, you know, if this thing survived my dog, a shovel beating, and a gunshot to the head, I'm going to let it be.
That's nature saying, just let it go.
Let it go, Brad. Just let it go. And so I wished him my best, and we brought the dog in, and I never saw the
wow,
possum again.
Wow, that's incredible.
So,
I mean, that's a supernatural possum right there.
If I told that story to Michael Lynch, he would say it was a ghost. He would probably say he would say that was a ghost, an apparition of a possum. But,
wow.
But he survived. No worse for the wear, even though I shot him in the head at point blank range. He was fine.
Did you see him any time after this?
Nope. Did not see him any time after that.
Wow.
But,
that's incredible.
But still, I thought of that because at least I didn't chuck him in the woods. And unlike apparently in your
story. You purposely shot a possum in the head.
I did, but he survived. You know, your snake may or may not have survived.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about
that. The encounter with the lawnmower. But
right.
My possum survived and was walking around with no problems. Within a week or two after a gunshot to the head.
I'm sure. Do you think it was anything to do with the fact that it was a .22 and nothing more high caliber?
Well, it's that. And also I researched it. And possums have a brain that's about the size of a couple of peanuts. They have very tiny brains.
So you probably missed the brain.
So I probably missed the brain.
Wow.
Okay, even though I shot him point blank range, right between the eyes, right above the eyes, right to the skull, probably missed the brain. Because they have a very, very small brain. And so, I mean, as gruesome as it sounds, he probably survived. I know he survived because he was alive a couple of weeks later.
Another question for you. Did you hear anything from the neighbors after that?
No, I didn't go around. You know, I was tempted to go to one of my neighbors and say, hey, you know, I heard a gunshot the other night. Any idea?
Who is that fool?
What kind of moron is shooting a gun in suburbia? But I didn't.
And he's definitely not shooting at possums.
Oh, of course. No one would do that. Nobody would do that. I did not inquire, nor did anyone ask.
That's unbelievable.
But mine lived, and I did not find any large pile of excrement mm-hmm. anywhere close to the animal I was vanquishing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just absolutely crazy. And I really, truly think that, like you and Sue were saying, it's nature getting its revenge on me.
Nature getting... So what I want to know is, when you come back from vacation,
mm-hmm.
I want you to make sure that you tell on the air when next time you mow your lawn, whether you're going to see any more evidence of the snake.
I'm sure I mean, the woods that back up to my house always just are full of interesting creatures back there. Frogs, lizards. But this snake, I know this snake in particular was the one. So I would not be surprised if there's some sort of snake impersonator out there who's just going to mess with me.
Well, I do, in the interest of full disclosure, a couple of years ago, my youngest daughter, who's now going off to college next month, said, Dad, I want a snake as a pet.
Ooh, really?
And I said, great, not a problem. My wife was not on board,
mm-hmm.
but we let her get it. So she gets this little ball python from the pet store.
Hold on. I've never heard little and python in the same.
This thing is like 3 inches, 4 inches long, and it's a ball python. It's a baby.
Okay. How big does it get?
Well, that's what my daughter failed to disclose.
Right.
Okay. And what she failed to disclose two important pieces of information. One, how big they get, which is going to be measured in feet.
Oof.
But she didn't tell us that. The other part that she failed to disclose was how long they live, because a ball python, a domesticated ball python, has a life expectancy of 35 years.
Get out of town. Really?
35 years.
Oh.
And, of course, she bought this 2 years ago.
Is this the one when she was at school?
In high school. And
okay.
And so now this thing is very large. We've got a very large tank. The coolest part is that it eats mice, okay, that you feed it, and it is really cool to watch. The eating process.
Wow.
I will tell you, it's very cool to watch.
And I will say, and I wish Sue was in here for this.
She literally ran out of the studio.
I can't blame
her.
The snake that I've seen in the past, other than the fact that when I picked it up and it bit me with its massive bite, whenever I've seen it mowing in the past, I've always avoided it. However, this time my grass was, for my grass, abnormally high.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I did not see it in the grass when I ran over it.
So it was negligence, not intentional.
Yes.
With malice aforethought.
But I will say my actions afterwards were probably pretty inexcusable, but that's another story.
Well, now that my daughter's going off to college for 4 years.
Yeah, who gets she's not taking the snake, is she?
You're looking at the snake wrangler.
Mm.
I am now the snake wrangler.
Good luck with that.
Because my wife won't even touch it. So yes, we needed to call this segment cruelty to animals segment or something. I'm not sure what we need to call it. But I definitely want to hear, Dave Klein.
I will have an update.
An update to the story next time.
I'm going to go out on my lawn tonight and see if the poop's still out there or if there's even more. Because it would not surprise me.
Oh, that's funny. Hey, when we come back, we're going to hear from the D.C. police chief, Robert Conti, because he made a statement today that is, it could have been made about the city of St. Louis. It is very prescient and very on point. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, we're winding up the Mark Reardon show this afternoon. Mark should be back on Monday, so tune in then, and he can fill you in on his adventures on vacation. In the meantime, I mentioned this before the break, and earlier during the Reardon-less roundtable, the big topic and one of the big topics was Kimberly Gardner and how that office is just a hot mess. And Kim Gardner's office really is tracking what we're seeing nationwide with regard to this ending the cash bail, where people are arrested, they're just let go, and then, of course, they're free to go commit other crimes. And what struck me was I heard an interview today with the Washington, D.C. police chief, Robert Conti, and what he talked about, he could have been describing the city of St. Louis. He could have been describing Chicago. He could have been describing Los Angeles. What he pointed out as being on the ground in Washington, D.C., is what police officers are having to deal with nationwide in terms of this zeal to end cash bail and other programs that are designed just to let people who have been arrested for serious felony crimes run loose. Here's what the Washington, D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti said today.
But I'm going to tell you the truth. The real issue is we have a vicious cycle of bad actors who do things, no accountability, and they end up back in community. And the police officers, and I guarantee you, when we lock up whoever did this, they will be no stranger to us. I promise you that. So I want us to make sure that we are reclaiming this community. And my hope is that as we do this, that this reverberates through our city, that this is what the response should look like. It should look like this, right? Because there are a lot of corners that I go to after a murder has occurred, and it's just me, it's just the officers. Who are the people that are closest to the pain, right? That's when we get folks' attention, right? When you're closest to the pain, when you hear the gunshots in your community, that begs a different reaction versus it being someplace else and you just kind of happen to catch it on the news. This was real for some people, but it's been happening in communities all across our city. And I'm saying to you, enough is enough. I've been a police officer in this city for over 30 years. I've been born and raised right here in this city. Started my patrol career right here in this district. And the way that we're going and the things that we're trying to do, we want to help people. Yes, we should. But you cannot coddle violent criminals. You cannot. You cannot treat violent criminals who are out here making communities unsafe for you, for your loved ones, for me, for my loved ones. They might not want a job. They might not. They might not need services. What they may require is to be off of our streets because they're making it unsafe for us.
Oh my gosh, that was brilliant.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
The guy's great.
That's it in a nutshell.
He summarized it up, and I hope, Sue, this is not the last that we've heard from the D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti.
Boy, if he did that off the top of his head, not only is he right on, but he is well-spoken. Boy, that was beautifully wrapped up.
It was, and he was speaking from experience.
Yes.
He was.
And I hope his message does not ring hollow in that community, where he just has to say this over and over and over again, because it sounds like that's been the case.
Mm-hmm. It has been the case. And just what struck me, Dave, and you and I talked about this earlier today, what really struck me was how that rings true, not just for D.C., but for St. Louis, for so many other communities across the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have easily have been said right here in St. Louis. Hey, one of the things I want to make sure we get to in the time we have left is for a long time now, one of your regular segments, Dave, has been playing the number one song for this date in history.
Yeah, we go back 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, so on and so forth, and to today. Usually the problem you run into, and Sue, I'm sure you can attest to this, is for many weeks at a time, the number one song is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've been doing lately, we've been going back and seeing what the number two song is.
Which is really interesting. So yeah. What do you got teed up for us today?
This is the number one song from this date in 1971.
Now, number one or the number two song?
I'm sorry, number two song. Number two song.
For 1971.
Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe.
Oh, you're in the Raiders.
Yep. Now, see, you're not even old enough to remember this.
I know this song, but I did not know who it was.
Now, Sue, does this bring back any memories for you?
Yeah, I remember the song. Yeah, I was little, but I remember it.
Yeah, see, I was five when this song came out. But what this makes me think of is swimming at the public pool, and they were playing this over the loudspeakers.
Well, that's something to swim to.
Yeah, I think the timeliness of the song, too, is it's called Indian Reservation. There's no way.
Oh, my gosh.
You could name a song like that today.
So is that song, is that being played in honor of the Cleveland Guardians?
Yeah,
right.
No kidding.
No coincidence there. All right, this is the number two song from 1981.
1981.
George Harrison.
Yeah.
I knew some of his solo stuff, being my age, but I did not know this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though it rocketed up to number two?
Yeah.
Do you remember what the number one was, Dave, that we had to pull this one? Was it Kim Carnes again?
I think it was Kim Carnes again, yeah. Wow. Betty Davis Eyes.
Betty Davis Eyes. It just hung on forever.
It did hang on forever. And, of course, George Harrison, boy, he did a lot of good things with the Traveling Wilburys, too.
Oh, yeah. Excellent supergroup there.
I love that. I've listened to that album over and over and over again. Him and Jeff Lynne just did a fabulous job. And so now what's next?
Number two song from 1991.
1991. You're unbelievable.
EMF. Unbelievable is the name of the song.
Yeah.
This is your theme song, isn't it, Dave?
Absolutely.
It's your walk-up song.
I walk into my house every Friday playing this song.
And it comes on when you walk
right.
in the house.
Yeah.
I think EMF is a one-hit wonder, aren't they?
I don't think
there's another one.
Right.
No, that's right. I mean, this song, obviously everybody's heard this song, but I've never heard anything else from them. These always bring back memories. And now, Dave, do you have any memories of that? I mean, now we're getting into more stuff your age.
I was only, in 1991, I was only seven, so I barely remember that song being popular. I remember my older brother really liking that group for their one hit that they had.
One hit wonder.
Yeah. All right, this is number two in 2001. This is more of my generation. This is Lifehouse, Hanging by a Moment.
Okay, sure.
And we'll quickly go through 2011.
Oh, Adele. She's hanging on.
Great song.
Yep.
That's before she lost all the weight.
Right. And this is the number two song right now, Olivia Rodrigo. I don't get it, but that's just me.
I'm sorry. I do feel old right now.
Right.
Number two song from currently, correct?
Yep.
Correct, yeah.
That's the current, of those, Dave, what's your favorite?
Oh, I think Adele.
Okay.
Adele.
Sue Thomas, of those we played, what's your favorite?
What was the 80s one?
George Harrison.
That's why I vote for George.
Yeah, me too. George Harrison.
Can't go wrong
there. All right. Yep. There we go. Hey, thanks for sitting in with us today on the Mark Reardon Show. Again, Mark will be back on Tuesday. Great being with you. I'll be in for Annie Fry a couple of days next week, so hopefully we will get together then. Brad Young, sitting in today for the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.